Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of From the Touchline for 90 Minutes. I'm Todd Stauber, and I'm here with Sam Lee. We have a great show for you tonight as we look at the MLS Cup Final and David Beckham's final performance in the MLS. We'll travel to England for a look at the Premier League action from today and the first weeks for Harry Redknapp and Rafa Benitez. We'll talk Madrid, the derby, and potential pressure mounting on Jose Mourinho. And we'll look at Wesley Sneijder's potential move to Manchester United in January. But Sam, we start with the MLS Cup Final, and as it happened last year, LA Galaxy have defeated Houston Dynamo, and they've done that by a score of 2-1. And your thoughts on the game? Obviously, Beckham's last performance. I believe he delivered the ball to Omar Gonzalez for the first goal. And, you know, he leaves going out on the best note possible. What are your thoughts, Sam?
Well, it's a Hollywood ending, isn't it? You know, the romantic. I mean, last week it had hoped for and predicted that you know, Beckham and the Galaxy would walk away with a victory. And, you know, they did that. It was actually 3-1. I think you had to leave the game to get ready, prepared for the show. And, Robbie Keane scored,
Robbie Keane scored
a penalty in the last, in extra time almost, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah,
okay.
But yeah, until the Galaxy had equalized, it really wasn't a great game. It was a strange game. It didn't really have a sort of cup final feel to it. You know, Houston Dynamo. You know, the chances. You know, it wasn't as though they were completely on top, but they were creating chances, and it just seemed to be a little bit too easy. And I heard Bruce Arena talk at halftime. He said, you know, we're not going to panic. You know, we know what we need to fix. You know, we're not kids. And I think, you know, by him saying that, God, he was just happy that it was only 1-0 to Houston, because, you know, Galaxy really weren't out of the races. And you know, perhaps thought that was, part of that is the pressure of the expectation and the weight on the shoulders of it, of, you know, producing. You know, everybody wanted, I think for the most part, the neutrals wanted, you know, Galaxy and Beckham to, you know, to win the championship. And, you know, I think maybe a little bit of pressure was on their shoulders early in the game, and I think that showed.
Yeah, well, and, you know, a couple other guys, obviously, to mention when you talk about the Galaxy. I think Robbie Keane played another great game. I mean, his movement off the ball is just a different class. And he was fantastic. Again, obviously, he did – I'm not actually looking now, yes. He did get the last penalty and drew the penalty against Houston's Tally Hall. But Landon Donovan, he kind of missed a sitter there early on in I think it was the 13th minute. But obviously got the penalty, finished it. He's won now 5 MLS titles. That's his 5th career MLS Cup goal, and he's got 22 goals in the postseason in the MLS. Beckham, obviously, what can you say about David Beckham, you know? But Landon Donovan, when you look at him, maybe a little overshadowed by Beckham leading in this final game, being a lot about him playing in his last match in the MLS. But you know, I'm looking at Landon Donovan, and I'm just seeing another world-class player that's right there, along with Robbie Keane.
Well, yeah, you look at the stats, the stats don't lie, Todd, and, you know, what he's done for – you know, what Donovan has done for the game in this country on and off the field, you know, it's been very well documented, and rightly so. He's been a credit to the league, and he's certainly been a credit to LA Galaxy, and he's been instrumental, Todd, in the last couple of years in the success of LA Galaxy. But I think you're right, you know, he perhaps a little bit overshadowed by, you know, the presence of David Beckham. It'll be interesting, Todd, to see what happens with Landon, because there's been a lot of talk early, you know, before the game started, that this may well be his last ever game. You know, he's talked openly and about him potentially, you know, quitting soccer altogether, and he's not quite sure where his head's at if he wants to do this again. And, you know, I think a lot of people now are sort of sat by, and, you know, the Beckham era is over, but now people are wondering, you know, is the Donovan era over as well? And it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next few days, and interesting to see, you know, with Beckham leaving, you know, what sort of impact that has upon, you know, Donovan's decision, because, you know, clearly he's been thinking about this for a long time, and it'll be really interesting to see, you know, what sort of developments take place, in the next
few
days.
Right, and I think, I know that he came out and said that, but, I don't know, the last few matches I've watched him play, he seemed to be playing with a revived passion, and and desire. But I, you know, we will see. Obviously, we're gonna see how that's all gonna play out. I hope that he doesn't. I mean, I don't think he should stop playing. I think he's got a lot to give still. And like I said a couple shows ago, I'd like to see him go and try to have a good spell over in Europe somewhere, because I think he's that good of a player. And, you know, obviously he proved it when he went over with both of his spells at Everton, and proved that he can do that. So I'd like to see him do that. But, you know, I guess we shall see. But just getting back to David Beckham a little bit, and, you know, as you know, I'm a big fan of his for many reasons. But, you know, he came to the MLS 6 years ago, took this fledgling league in a country that, you know, to be honest, is obsessed with every sport other than soccer. And he gave it credibility. He gave it relevance. He made the non-soccer fans of our country in America pay attention to the MLS. And he, after a slow start a little bit on the pitch, he wasn't, you know, I think he's been better these last couple of years, but he did deliver performances and results on the field. And, you know, I think it was funny because, Sam, when he came over here, I think, you know, people thought that he was going to, you know, people that didn't know him, just knew the name, thought he was going to be this guy that scored a million goals. Well, he's never been that guy. He's always been a player that I've admired just because he's an honest player. His greatness is a result of world-class service and a world-class work rate, the mix of those two. He's found success at every level of soccer he's ever played at in the world, from the World Cup to the English Premier League to La Liga, the Serie A, and now the MLS. And, you know, I just can't say enough about him as a player and what he's done for the league here. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see where he ends up moving on, Sam.
Yeah, well, it took a while, Todd, didn't it, to... you know, for the crowd, you know, for the crowd and for the fans to take to David Beckham. And I think part of it was, you know, the expectation. And you know, partly, Todd, is I don't think the, you know, the fan base in this country really knew what they were getting. They knew that they were getting a huge profile in David Beckham, you know, the brand Beckham. But, you know, I for the most part, I don't think they really knew what type of player they were getting. You know, I think, you know, in this country, you know, everybody wants the exciting player, the player that's going to take players on. And David Beckham isn't that player. You know, David Beckham is not a Cristiano Ronaldo. You know, David Beckham is not a Messi. He's not a Luis Suarez, you know. And, it took a while. You know, obviously, you know, like a lot of times in his lifetime, whether it's Man United, whether it's Real Madrid, he went through adversity. You know, he was booed a lot, you know, at various stadiums. And, you know, a couple of times, you know, those things spilled over to things in the field when he got sent off a few times. And, you know, you did wonder if the Beckham experiment was going to go a bit sour. But, you know, like every other time in his career, Todd, he's faced that, he's confronted it, and he's come through a better person and a better player. And he's made, you know, the LA Galaxy and the league, you know, better for that. I believe when he first joined the league, Todd, there were 13 teams in the division. In the MLS, yeah. Now they're 19, and the average gate has swelled by 10,000 to 12,000, you know, per game, and it's not just the games that Beckham was at. You know, certainly that was the case at the start, but you know, right. You're looking at, you know, attendances now being increased because now, you know Beckham has exposed, you know, people that weren't soccer fans to the game, and now they've been to it. You know, people are addicted. They've been sucked in.
Yeah, no, it's been amazing to see. And I think everybody did have some questions coming over wondering, you know, how much influence can this guy actually have? But I think he's shown where it's at. I mean, you know, you and I sit in our home stadium every week with 45,000 people here. You know, here in Seattle, our crowd, the Sounders, you know, their average attendance is double that of our Major League Baseball team here. And, you know, that certainly wasn't the case. You know, when the second division Sounders were here in Seattle, they averaged 4,000 people a game. And I think just the growth of the game through the MLS has been huge. You're seeing soccer-specific stadiums popping up everywhere. And, yeah, David Beckham isn't building these himself. But he's come in and he's done exactly what he said he was going to do. He was going to be an ambassador for the game, and he was going to play and try to win cups, and he's done it. And so I am really looking forward to seeing where his final challenge will lie. You know, I just have a strange feeling that he's going to end up at PSG, where he almost went last year. I just think I get the feeling from the interviews that I listened to this week that he wants to be back in Europe, you know, for a little bit. And so, you know, we'll see how that ends up. Any thoughts on where you think he's going to end up, Sam?
Well, it's a bit of a guessing game at the moment because he's, you know, Monaco have been suggested, and, you know, he hasn't ruled out England or returning to the Premier League, and he has come out today and said that he sees himself wanting to play in the Champions League for one more year or another season or two. And, you know, behind the scenes talk, I suspect that all these things have already been worked out. But, the Brecken brand, you know, is working there to keep him, you know, at the forefront of the headlines. And, you know, I think you're probably right, the romance of a project like PSG, you know, something like David Beckham going there and you know, taking that team and perhaps even that league to another level, Todd, is something that appeals to him. You know, not only, you know, is Beckham taking the individual teams that he plays on to the next level, but he's also improved, you know, the exposure to the league. And, you know, you would say that right now, Todd, you know, if you look at the French league compared to the Spanish league, the Italian league, and, you know, the German league, and even to the extent the Portuguese league, you know, they're a poor cousin. You know, it's not such a popular league, even though it's a great place where Arsene Wenger likes to do most of his winter shopping, right? You know, Arsene Wenger is renowned for liking a young French boy coming out of France, right? You know, part of me suspects that, you know, Beckham has that in his sight. Yeah. You know, Champions League with PSG, you know, he can go and sign there in January. You know, they're going to get out of their bracket. And, you know, how romantic would that be for Beckham to get to the Champions League final with PSG? And obviously that would keep the missus happy, right? Out in the Champs-Élysées every other day having a coffee.
Right. Well, I think that she's, you know, I think Paris obviously suits Posh's interests well. And the other, you know, and I agree that the thought of playing in the Champions League has to be on his mind because he's clearly capable of doing that. And PSG is a place where, based on the French league and where it's at, you know, PSG is going to be in the Champions League here for the next few years at least. And, you know, I think for him to get the chance to play with an Ibrahimovic and some of the other quality players that they're bringing in there, you know, I think that that's obviously going to be appealing to him. Another situation that came up this week that I was interested by, and it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, but Beckham's former teammate at Manchester United, Eric Cantona, is the director of the New York Cosmos, who look like they will be the 20th MLS team starting play in 2014. And Cantona wants to bring Beckham there. And you know, whether, you know, Beckham goes as an owner there, it doesn't look like it's possible in his contract. For some reason, New York is the only market that he can't own an MLS franchise in. And I'm not sure why they would make that rule, Sam. But it'll be interesting to see how that plays out with Cantona, because I know that Cantona was always a fan of Beckham when Beckham was a young player at United. And obviously Beckham was, you know, was very fond of Cantona. So what do you think about that situation potentially coming to fruition, Sam?
Well, David Beckham, in my worst possible French accent, as Eric Cantona said, was when the seagulls follow the trawler, it means that there are some scraps. So, I did think about that. And I did think that, you know, the Cosmos are going to be fashionable, right? They're going to be sexy. And, you know, that is exactly the type of brand or type of environment that David Beckham wants to be attached to. You know, I do find it very strange that, you know, he has that clause in his contract or his ownership contract that he's not able to have an ownership of a club in New York. But, you know, things may change, you know, the way the league is developing right now. And, you know, let's be honest, Todd, you know, if you look at our own situation with the Sounders as an example, you know, I think part of the success now, you know, stage one for the Sounders was become an MLS team. And stage two, you know, was, you know, Portland and Vancouver, you know, coming into MLS, because that creates the rivalry, that creates the local derbies. And, you know, that generates the interest of the fans. You know, the you know, the Cascade Cup is something that, you know, the three teams on this side fight for, and you know, I think that, you know, if anything, that, that will improve the MLS, you know, with the you know, the New York Red Bulls having the Cosmos there as a local derby. I mean, it just adds to the, you know, adds to the interest factor, adds to the appeal of the league, and it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, that clause in his contract, you know, was changed to perhaps accommodate that. But you certainly see that as being a chance, right? Cantona, David Beckham at the Cosmos. It looks right, it sounds right, and it's a possibility, I think.
Yeah, well, and the clause in the contract about New York doesn't make sense, and maybe they'll go and rethink that, because, I mean, if you really think about it, it would make sense to put David Beckham there in New York, second franchise, and, you know, it just makes sense, but we'll see how that plays out, but either way, again, MLS Cup final today, played at the Home Depot Center in Carson, California, Los Angeles Galaxy, a 3-1 victory, Sam, over the Houston Dynamo for their second consecutive MLS Cup title and the final game of David Beckham's MLS career. You're listening to Todd Stauber and Sam Lady. I'm from the Touchline for 90 Minutes on Blog Talk Radio and BackSportsPage.com. You can call in at 760-283-0846. We'd love to hear from you. And any opinions that anybody wants to add in from the Touchline is brought to you by My Soccer Trainer, the top soccer training app available and a must for any player or coach. My Soccer Trainer is available on Android and iPhone. Sam, we're going to move on to the Premier League today. What a day in the Premier League. And just a couple great games, some surprising results, and couple managers that one manager that could be in a little bit of trouble. We're gonna go to London, where West Ham United handed Chelsea and the beloved Rafa Benitez a 3-1 defeat at Upton Park, and just a terrible day for Chelsea and a terrible day for Rafa Benitez. Up 1-0. On a goal, on a Juan Mata goal in the 13th minute, coming from Fernando Torres. I will say that was probably good to see, and they thought things were going well there, but they were unable to finish. They squandered many, many chances, and in the 86th minute, West Ham substitute Mohamed Diame comes on, gets one, and another one in injury time ends 3-1. Sam, what a disaster for Chelsea and Rafa Benitez.
Well, it's interesting because I actually got up at the crack of 5 o'clock to watch this one this morning, and you know, it was a complete domination by Chelsea in the first half. And were it not for some poor finishing, you know, Chelsea really thought it could have been out of sight by halftime. However, you know, you can imagine the type of conversation that Big Sam Allardyce has had with his players at halftime, and you know, Chelsea were finding too much space, and they were doing basically thought whatever they wanted, and it was just a little bit too loose from West Ham. But you know, West Ham came out with a couple of key substitutions from Sam Allardyce, which sort of really changed the game. And it was you know West Ham played a Sam Allardyce type game. It was fast, it was physical, it was direct. It was about, you know, getting the ball to your target player and picking up the second balls and trying to gain territory and pick up set pieces, whether it's a corner kick or a free kick. But, yeah, it's interesting. You know, we could have been having a conversation now, thought about how Rafa Benitez has rejuvenated Chelsea. You know, had they been, you know, 3 or 4 goals up at halftime, which they should have been, through some slack finishing. But now we're having a conversation saying, well, look, you know, Rafa Benitez is already on the chopping board here.
He could be the shortest lived managerial stint of all time. I mean, I could see Abramovich sacking him if he doesn't start getting results, which would be crazy, but I could see it happening, couldn't you?
Well, it wouldn't surprise me, but I think Torres, it would be tough for him to do that, because that would be, you know, it would be really embarrassing for him to, you know, get rid of the coach that has brought the first European Championship with Chelsea and the FA Cup You know, and bearing in mind that he was he was basically the interim manager himself and Robbie Di Matteo. For him to bring Rafa Benitez in and sack him so quickly, would make him more of a laughing stock perhaps than he is already. I think the biggest issue that they have right now is just that the fans are not huge fans of Rafa Benitez. You know, would the fans be in a different position, Todd, now if, Chelsea had won the last three games? Then absolutely, I think, the Rafa out signs would gradually begin to diminish. And, it would be enough for the subject. But, I think what we're looking at here, Todd, is just some carryover from, the Robbie Di Matteo situation. I think tactically and physically, they're perhaps a little bit raw and a little bit young. And I think we had this conversation in the last few weeks on the show where we talked about, how young these players were and they lacked a lot of leadership. You don't have a Terry out there at the moment. You don't have a Lampard. The only players you've got out there that have really got some different experiences and sort of advantage. So it's a tough situation. I think I saw today the stat was that they've not won in 8 games in the Premier League, and Rafa's only been the coach for 3, and it takes time for a coach to insert the methods, because it's going to be a complete shift from Robbie Di Matteo's, right? Attacking play and not so much based on defending, and Rafa's definitely at defending first. So it's going to take time, I think, for him to insert his methodology to the team and change the culture of how the team plays and how they sell.
Well, I think that it is going to take some time. Unfortunately, that might be the one thing he doesn't have there is time. The bottom line is that he's the interim manager. I mean, unless he does very, very well, I don't think there's any chance that they're going to retain him at the end of the season. And if it's going so poorly as we keep going on here, and it is taking too much time, I could just see Abramovich just getting rid of him and bringing somebody else in. I could just see it happening. Here he is. He's getting abused by his own fans when they're on the road. They're not even at Stamford Bridge. They're still chanting today. They're chanting, there's only one Di Matteo. They're chanting that you're not welcome here. They've got the huge Rafa out banner there. I mean, he's not even at home. These fans are following him to let him know that he's not welcome there. And then, of course, the West Ham fans are abusing him with you're getting sacked in the morning, which, who knows? I wouldn't rule anything out with this owner. But I agree with you as far as Chelsea is not having the players, to really play at the level that they're being expected to play at. They just don't have it. I think Hazard has been a good player for them, a good surprise for them. But, I think you talked about this a couple weeks ago. If you look at some of the players, like a Michael Essien, I mean, he was a huge influential player there. And, John Mikel Obi, I don't think he's quite at that level. And you look, you have no Lampard. Like I said last week, losing Drogba was a huge loss for them. And I think they're in trouble. I mean, that's the bottom line, is I think they're in trouble.
Well, we know that people like Roman, can be a bit egotistical, and I certainly don't think we'll see Benitez leave before the end of the season. It's almost the worst thing the fans can do right now in terms of wanting Rafa out, because I think that's basically going to make Roman's position that much stronger, because he's not going to want to prove the fans to be right. People that have got that type of power and that amount of status and that amount of money, don't like to be told what to do, Todd. And I suspect that it's the worst thing that can happen right now with the fans, because, he's simply not going to give in to them. It's a very tough position. I think at some point, the penny may drop him. And, I think they probably need a really solid director of football in there that has got a long-term approach. I think we've talked about this time and time again in the last few weeks. Chelsea as an institution is in transition. The Ashley Coles, the John Terrys, the Frank Lampard, the Didier has already gone. Potentially looking at losing Peter Cech in the next couple of transfer windows. This is a very, very different institution and a different team, different club to the ones that we've been used to seeing. And, it's going to take time. You know, and if you look at, you know, the academy system right now, and you look at the, you know, the transfer approach for Chelsea, you know, you're not going to find another John Terry right now. You know, you're not going to get another Frank Lampard coming through the system. Or, you know, albeit by West Ham. You know, there just isn't that homegrown, you know, approach where, you know, where the fans can really relate to players. If you look at the, if we were to take out John Terry now and Lampard and Ashley Cole, Todd, you know, who are the, you know, who is the player there that the fans can really relate to? You know, I don't think the answer is nobody. You know, with the exception maybe of the young guy that's, you know, that's going to come in and play left back, potentially. You know, I just don't know if there's anybody there. So, you know, Chelsea, as we've known them, you know, is very different to the Chelsea that we see now. And it's an evolving environment, it's an evolving culture. And, you know, we may never see a Chelsea team that, that had the type of profiles, you know, the Terry, the Droppers, and the Lampards ever again.
Yeah, well, it's very true. And, you know, as any Leeds United fan can tell you, it's always, you know, it's up and down all the time. So let's hope Chelsea down isn't what Leeds United was. But, you know, I guess we'll see how that plans out. Either way, I'm not a big Rafa Benitez fan, but I feel bad for the guy because, you know, he's just doing what he can at this point. And I think you're right, Di Matteo, you know, what's going on now is a little bit left over still from the mess that was there when Di Matteo was still there. So we'll see how that pans out. We're going to move on. We're going to move on to Reading. And, wow, what a 34 minutes was played in this game. 4-3 Manchester United victory over Reading today and at the Majeski Stadium. All 7 goals of the match scored in the first 34 minutes. The final from Robin Van Persie set up by Wayne Rooney, and United takes the game 4-3. Sam, what do you have to say about that 34 minutes?
Well, I'm disappointed that I didn't get a chance to see the game. I'm sorry, I'm going to go back and watch the highlights later this evening when we finish up here. But, you know, again, you know, let's look at a couple of things here, Todd. Another game. I think this is the 10th or 11th time that Man United have conceded the first goal of the game, but then gone on to win the game. And, you know, it shows you a lot about, you know, the firepower that they have. And it also shows you a little bit about the vulnerability they have in defence, you know. You know, Alex Ferguson, Porto Mourinho, right? He took out Raphael after 34 minutes. And obviously he was Raphael himself was very disappointed about that, but, you know, I think, you know, if Ferguson to make a decision like that, it goes to show you, you know, how much trouble the boy was in. You know, he's just coming off, he just picked up a yellow card. And, you know, for Ferguson to, you know, to make a substitution that's not sort of injury forced at that time of the game really showed you a little bit about where United's defending was at. And, you know, no disrespect, it's odd to Reading, but, you know, Man United just conceded 3 goals to Reading.
Once again, it is, you know, another game where they've gone behind. They went behind again a second time, you know.
3-1.
Anderson equalizes. Rooney puts them up. And then in the 19th minute, Adam Lafondre scores for Reading, and it goes 2-2. Now Morrison has scored on the 23rd minute, and it's 3-2. 3-2. And so now Rooney gets another in the 30th and sets up Van Persie's and they win. And, I think your points are spot on. The attacking options they have are fantastic. They are in number. They've got so many options. But the defending is an issue. And, you know, I've been pretty hard on Rio Ferdinand this year. And, you know, I thought, again, he was dead average. I just think he's just lost it. He just doesn't have it. A lot of what he did at his peak as a player, you know, relied on he's a big guy, but he still had that pace and had that closing speed, and he just doesn't have it anymore, and he's just a different player, which is sad to see because I've always been a big fan of him. But I think, you know, you've got Raphael and Patrice Evra, who are guys that like to get forward wide, but I don't feel defensively that they're great players. They are good attacking fullbacks, but I don't think that they're great defending players. So, yeah, you've got some serious issues there. You know, you've got Phil Jones and Chris Smalling, a couple younger guys that, look to be maybe the potential answer, but I think even those guys still haven't really proven themselves to Sir Alex Ferguson.
Well, I think that's one of the reasons that, you know, Fergie is keeping around, you know, the Ferdinand, the Giggs, and the Scholes. You know, it's almost taught similar to the situation that we see at Chelsea. You know, the difference is that the difference between a Man United and Chelsea right now is that, you know, Alex Ferguson is evolving the team gradually. You know, it's not a revolution. He's not brought eight players in one summer and played them all from, you know, straight off the bat. You know, he brought, you know, Phil Jones in when he'd only played 22, 23 games for Blackburn in the Premier League, but obviously saw his potential. Same thing for Chris Smalling, right? He came from a non-league team, but, you know, before he signed for Fulham. You know, Fergie has done a good job, and I think he's realised that from his mistakes in the past. You know, mm-hmm. he's got rid of players, and he's trying to maybe change things too quickly and bring players in. And I think that, you know, he realises that nowadays, Todd, you know, bringing younger players in is great, but you can't rely upon those players now week in, week out in the Premier League. You know, you'll never see a situation where you've got Nicky Bart, Scholes, Giggs, Beckham, you know, or, you know, being the sort of foundation of the team in the Premier League. That's simply not going to happen nowadays. Yeah, and I think you're right. You know, I think Rio's around to help nurture. I think, you know, Scholes and Giggs are around because they're required for the team, but I think Rio's more required to help develop the character of the players and develop some of the qualities that, you know, perhaps Rio had in himself.
Yeah, well, I think it's still, you know, it still is, we talked about this last week, it's concerning for United. But having said that, here they are, 3 points clear at the top of the table. And also, you know, moving on in the Champions League. So it's, you know, they're in a great spot. You know, I mean, despite all of those problems in the back, they are in a great spot. We're going to move on here, the rest of the league. You are listening to Todd Stauber and Sam Leahy here on From the Touchline for 90 Minutes on Blog Talk Radio and BackSportsPage.com. We are talking Premier League right now. You can call in at 760-283-0846 if you want to weigh in on the Premier League action of the day. Other scores from the day and, you know, a couple other pretty interesting results here, Sam. Swansea 2-0 over Arsenal. A little bit disastrous there for Arsene Wenger. Any thoughts on that game?
I didn't get a chance to see it, but, you know, our friend Michu, you know, 2.8 million buy from Spain looks like being one of the signings of the season. Remember,
yeah,
he scored a fantastic goal, Todd, the first game of the season. And you wonder, you know, sometimes maybe that's a little bit of beginner's luck. But, you know, the lad has gone on and been an incredible asset for Swansea. Swansea are arguably, Todd, are a better team now than they were under Brendan Rodgers. And they've lost perhaps some of their senior players. And by that, I mean, you know, Joe Allen and Scott Sinclair, even though they're young players, you know, they were pretty instrumental to how that team set up and the performance and the profile of that team. But, I think it's made them better because now they've all of a sudden got a counter-attacking element about them. And, you know, that's how they scored their two goals today, you know, against Arsenal. A massive surprise, that one.
Michu with two goals, 88th minute and an injury time there. For, you know, a great result for Swansea, and you know, I agree with you. They're playing fantastic right now, and you know, I think that's you know, Arsenal, they're in a little bit of trouble maybe. You know, it's just the results haven't been there, and you know, now with this defeat, they've dropped to 10th in the table. They're only on 21 points. Swansea moves to 7th on 23 points as a result of the victory, but I think Arsenal could be in a little trouble, Sam. What do you think?
Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, there are a lot of things that tend to happen in any sort of evolution of a team. And, you know, Arsenal last year got off to a very, very bad start. And, you know, they weren't, you know, even they got off to a bad start, they weren't playing that bad. But right now, you know, Arsenal are really just struggling to get into gear. You know, when was the last time that you saw, you know, a team, you know, outplay Arsenal, you know, on, you know, and outpossess Arsenal, and not just, you know, I'm not talking about a team that puts them under, you know, high pressure. I'm talking about a team that moves the ball like Swansea. You know, I think you're right. I think Arsenal, Arsenal now are at a tipping point. And, you know, Arsene Wenger is obviously a big believer in, you know, bringing talent, young talent in and nurturing it and selling it on, which is obviously part of the profile of the club. to balance the books. But yeah, I think you're right. I think Arsenal, this is a different Arsenal team to the one we've ever seen. It arguably is one of the poorest teams that they've seen. You know, I'm not talking about poor players here. They've got some fantastic players. You know, Kozlov is an incredible talent. I'm a big fan of Podolski. I think he's a great player. You know, I think Theo Walcott is evolving into a solid player, a consistent player. Anyway, I think you're right. I think Arsenal are struggling right now, and you know, it's the first time that we've really seen this in an Arsenal team. It'll be interesting to see, you know, if they can bounce back. You know, again, similar to the Chelsea situation, Todd. Not a lot of leaders there in the dressing room. You know,
yeah, Fabregas has left,
Song has left. You know, who are the leaders? Who are the players now that are, you know, that are driving the team forward? Who are the players that you can rely upon, you know, when it hits the fan, you know?
Yeah, well, it's, they do lack a leader in that locker room. And, you know, the loss today, by the way, to Swansea City was at home at the Emirates. And I'm sure it's, you know, didn't go down well with the 60,000 Arsenal fans that were there. Moving on. But not too far away, Craven Cottage at Fulham. Tottenham 3-0, Jermaine Defoe with two goals in that game. Liverpool 1-0 win over Southampton at home. That's a Daniel Agger goal. Everton was, after a Fellaini strike, was on their way to a potential victory at City, but a Carlos Tevez penalty 10 minutes later at the Etihad Stadium equalized, and that game finished 1-1. Which is not a bad result for Everton, if you think about that, Sam, going to City and getting a point on the road there. Not bad, but not a great result for City. And yet another, you know, poor result for City. Any thoughts on that result?
Well, the last team to win at the Etihad Stadium, Todd, was actually Everton. You know, he could almost, you know, I was driving to a game myself, so I was listening to it on... I was listening to it on satellite radio, and it seems like the second half, almost like both teams were, you know, were happy with a point, and we can still, you know, Man City is a team that is perhaps got a little bit of the champions hangover. You know, they certainly have not hit the high gear yet, but they've still not lost a game, and you know, that off very often, as you know, being a Man United fan. That has always been a sign of a championship team. You know, they haven't hit a winning streak yet, or then they haven't hit a strong streak yet, where they play consistently well, but they haven't lost a game. Everton themselves, you know, got off to a very, very strong start at the start of the season. Obviously, that win over Man United was huge for them. Everton being a team that has typically started very, very poorly in the Premier League. You know, David Moyes made a few changes to, you know, how they prepared for the season this year, and that seemed to make a big difference to how they started the season. But, you know, they've dropped off now in the last couple of games, so... you know, a good result, a bad result, I'm not sure. Everton would have been happy, I think, with a point. Man City, considering they didn't play that well, and the fact that Everton were the last team to win there, I think Mancini would probably be happy with a point. As you know, looking at the fantastic way that the season ended last year, every single point and every single goal, Todd, you know, it seems irrelevant now, but when it gets down to those two games of the season, you know, it's these goals in the last minute that really make a difference when you add them up towards the end of the season.
Yeah, it's a great point, because it does really all add up, and it's easy to say, oh, it's just December, it's early, but all these points are going to come into play when we get to the end of the season. We had another action in the Premier League, Stoke City on the road at the Hawthorns in Birmingham with a 1-0 win over West Bromwich Albion, and after starting very, very well, West Brom has dropped a few here. It's a Dean Whitehead goal in the 75th minute on that one, so Stoke City with a 1-0 win. And lastly, on the results for the day, Queen's Park Rangers, Aston Villa, 1-1, full-time, at Loftus Road. It was Harry Redknapp's first home match, and, you know, not a bad result. I don't think it's a bad result, although it does... They equaled the Premier League's longest ever winless start to a season by not winning this game. But they haven't won in 15 matches, which is only the last time that happened. It was Swindon in 1993-94, which obviously isn't great. But I think, although it's going to be very difficult for Harry Redknapp to get QPR out of the relegation zone. I thought there were some signs today that Redknapp definitely has the ability to pull this team from the relegation zone, and not a terrible result today. Sam, what do you think?
Well, I call that interesting because I think that's a terrible result for both teams because a point, even though we're talking about, at the top end of the season, at the top end of the league, total, I think every goal and every point really makes a difference. But, in situations like this where you've got, QPR and Aston Villa, this, in my opinion, this is 2 points lost for both these teams. We're almost at a point now. Well, I mean, we're past we're past a third of the way through the season, Todd. And, I think Redknapp's come out this week and said, the last two-thirds of the season, they need to win at least 10 games to stay up. And, as every game ticks by, that becomes more. You take a game off today, that's a game they haven't won, and all of a sudden, they don't get a result in the next game, that becomes 11 games they need to win. And, 11 games that you need to win in 21, 22. So I think QPR are in a lot of trouble. I think Aston Villa, a team that are, in transition. But I think QPR are in a ton of trouble. And I think Harry Redknapp now is having probably, his first insight as to what the culture is like with the team. By all accounts and things that I've heard, it's very, very poor. You've got some players there that have come in this season that are earning 3, 4, 5 times as much as some of the players that have been there for a number of years. And apparently it's a very sort of fractioned, change room. And as you know, Todd, in any coaching position, any time that there's a problem in a change room, it has a significant impact upon the, performance of the team. So, I honestly think that, QPR are in a ton of trouble, Todd. I think that if we don't see QPR win 2 games by the end of this year, I think that team's going down. There's no way back for them.
Well, they certainly do need to start picking points up, but at the moment they are just 7 points adrift of safety. Sunderland has games in hand, 2 games in hand, but even Newcastle, Wigan, and Villa all sit at 14, 15, 16 on 14 points. So even if you said that's where they would be safe at 14 points, I think you're still, I think it's still possible. 8 points is, yes, of course, it's a lot. There's no easy wins in the English Premier League. But that's a good, if they get on form in January, get on form in February, that's a string of 3, 4, 5 results. They can make those points up, I believe.
Well, I think a challenge we've got there, Todd, is of all the teams that have ever stayed up, in the Premier League, they've always stayed up because they've had somebody that can put the ball in the back of the net on a regular basis, right? And you look at that QPR team right now, and the first thing I think about is one, they're conceding too many goals, right? Especially from set pieces. It's almost like any time I watch Match of the Day or watch highlights online, it's almost like every time QPR play, they concede a goal from a corner kick or a set piece. And I think that, that line's too porous. It's conceded too many goals. And I just don't see, obviously Bobby Zamora and Danny Johnson, who are not prolific goal scorers themselves, both of those guys being out injured for the most part of the rest of the season, I'm struggling to see what QPR are doing at the goals. Of course, we're talking about Harry Redknapp, right? So he's obviously got a couple of players up his sleeve that he's going to bring in January that nobody's ever heard of. That's probably going to take him up to mid-table by the end of March.
Well, certainly, I'm looking forward to Harry Redknapp, just seeing what he can do with this. Also looking forward to him twitching and just all of his, all of what comes with Harry Redknapp. So really looking forward to that, just because he's just a character. Like I said last week, I just think he's a great, great person to have in the Premier League. I just think it's good for everyone that he's there, just because I just like him. And I hope that he can pull QPR out. And I think that he can, but I do agree with you that it's not going to be an easy task. It might be, if he does, it might be the greatest thing that he's ever accomplished as a manager.
Well, it would be the biggest comeback, I think, ever. That's ever we've ever seen in the Premier League. It would be a miracle.
Yeah. Definitely. Looking at the rest of the weekend, on Sunday we've got Norwich Sunderland. Norwich hasn't lost since a 4-1 defeat to Chelsea on October 6th. It's good, you know, they've had a very good run of form. They sit 13th in the table, you know, and they've got a chance to push the top 10 here. Sunderland, they've won just one match since September, a 3-1 win over Fulham 2 weeks ago. I don't see this game being a spectacle in terms of quality football, Sam, but I do admire the commitment the Norwich plays with, and I feel that this is a game that they're probably going to win. What do you think about that?
Well, I've actually watched the last couple of Sunderland games, Todd, and you know, Sunderland have actually not played that poorly. You know, they're not in a position like QPR where they're all over the shop. They've actually not played that bad, and a few things, you know, have gone their way or gone against them in terms of refereeing decisions and some just hideous mistakes. You know, the goalkeeper made a horrific mistake, you know, last week, and you just can't, you know, you can't legislate for that, Todd, as a coach. You can't go into games expecting that these professional players are going to be making mistakes like this at that level. And some actually haven't done that bad. Having said that, you know, Norwich look like a new team. You know, they got a bit of a spanking from Liverpool and Chelsea, you know, a few games back, and I think ever since then, you know, they've changed their approach. You know, the best thing that happened for those teams, Todd, were those two games where they got a little bit of a spanking, because it's made them sort of go back to the drawing board a little bit and sort of realign, you know, their goals. And obviously, one of their first goals was to make themselves very difficult to play against, and two, to not concede many goals. And, you know, Chris Hatton's done a fantastic job there. So, you know, this is going to be a tough game to call. You know, Sunderland don't have a lot of goals in right now, where the looks of it, confidence is obviously a bit of a low, but they're not playing too poorly. So, in terms of game predictor, I think it's just probably got 1-1 stamped all over it.
Okay, well, we'll get back to that and see if you change your mind by the end of the show, which sometimes you do, and to be fair to you, you're allowed to. So that's good. We're going to move on to Monday. Newcastle, Wigan, both these teams sit on 14 points, 2 points clear of Southampton in the relegation zone. With a crucial Europa League match looming next week at Bordeaux, Sam, Newcastle hasn't won a match in any competition since their last Europa Cup fixture with Bordeaux, a 3-0 win at St. James Park on October 4th. Meanwhile, Wigan have split their past two fixtures with Reading and Man City, dropping the midweek feature to City 2-0, but defeating Reading 3-2 last week behind the Jordi Gomez hat-trick. And Sam, this match certainly will be interesting in terms of the fact that the winner will give themselves a bit of breathing room from that ever-dreaded relegation zone.
Well, it's incredible, so, isn't it? You look at the demise, you know, I call it demise, it's only temporary, of course, the demise of Newcastle ever since Pardew signed that 8-year contract that was put on the table for him, and who would not sign a contract that was lucrative of that? You know, they've been a bit of a decline. You know, you know, look at Newcastle this time last year. They couldn't stop scoring. Whether it was Demba Ba, they brought CCN in January, who had an incredible impact to that team. And you know, they looked like they were going to score goals, you know, every time they went forward. But they're a different team right now, and a bit of a dip. I think they're missing the presence of Johan Kabedi in midfield. I think he's a big, big player for them. You know, he's very influential from set pieces. I think they're missing him. You know, Wigan, who've got off to a, I would say that, you know, they've got off to a very reasonable start, Todd. You know, typically this is a Wigan team that is almost a mirror of Everton. They have a complete shocker at the start of the season and manage to pull it out towards the end of the season, and they just always end up, you know, I think they won at Man United last year, which basically was the game that, you know, kept them in the Premier League. But, you know, they're a different animal this year, and I think part of that is to do with, you know, the length of time that, you know, Martinez has had with that team, and, you know, he's the owner has patience to stick with him. Newcastle Wigan, I think it's going to be a good game, and I expect to see goals in this game, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, I think it will be a good game, and we could potentially be watching that game together on Monday. So looking forward to that. And that's it for the Premier League for today, and looking ahead to the next few games. You're listening to Todd Stauber and Sam Lady on From the Touchline for 90 minutes on Blog Talk Radio and BackSportsPage.com. You can call in at 760-283-0846. We'd love to hear from you. I don't think we've actually ever had a caller, have we, Sam?
I don't think we have, Todd, no. But everyone needs to know it's Todd's birthday today, so somebody needs to call in and wish Todd happy birthday. So that would be nice.
Right.
Somebody call in.
True. We should come up with a good prize maybe for our first caller to entice some people to come in and call. So maybe a night out with Sam Lady. I don't know. Can we get your missus to agree to that?
I'm not sure. Well, I think what will happen there, Todd, I think we'll find that Kim will be the first person that calls in. She will be the willing recipient of a night out with me. But anyway,
that would be nice.
The plumber's mate.
Exactly. From the Touchline is brought to you by My Soccer Trainer, the top soccer training app available and a must for any player or coach. My Soccer Trainer is available on Android and iPhone. We're going to move to Spain, Sam. Well, we're not going to move there. I wish we could, but we're going to look at Spain, and we're going to go to Madrid, where the Madrid derby happened today. Jose Mourinho has been sitting on a little bit of a hot seat at Real after a bad run of form that saw him sitting third in the La Liga table, 8 points adrift to second place, and that second place team being Atletico Madrid. But Cristiano Ronaldo provided a superb free kick in the 16th minute. Mesut Ozil added a second in the second half as Real took the Madrid derby over Atletico on Saturday, Sam. What are your thoughts about this and Jose Mourinho?
I think Mourinho's position is fine at Madrid. He's got a good relationship there with the president, which a lot of previous managers have not had. And you know, let's not forget, you know, Mourinho's almost in the same sort of position as Mancini. You know, both of those teams won the league last year. And, you know, they're sort of the ugly sister of the group. You know, everybody was expecting and wanting, you know, the Barcelonas or the Man Uniteds to win the league. And, you know, Real Madrid, you know, for the first time in a long time, managed to win the league. So, you know, I think perhaps there's a little bit of complacency there, Todd, set in with some of the players. Mourinho is very confident in his players, and he's very he's dedicated to his players and he supports his players. And I remember early in the season where he came out at a press conference and somebody said to him, you know, Jose, what's wrong? And he says, right now I have no team. And, you know, that was interesting. You know, I think part of that is what we know was sort of psychological management for the players in the sense that, you know, even though we've just won the league, right, you know, that was in the past, right? If we're going to get better as a group, we're going to get better as a team, you know, we have to start looking forward. And I think that's a little bit of they're on a little bit of a hangover from the previous season. There's been a little bit of chat about some issues in the dressing room. And, you know, Mourinho is the artist when it comes to that stuff. You know, if there is anybody that's causing trouble, you know, he'll fix that stuff and they'll move on. But, you know, it's a little bit of a bump in the road.
I did think that Mourinho did a great job of really putting the Cristiano Ronaldo situation to rest quickly when that all came about earlier in the year. Cristiano Ronaldo not celebrating a goal, saying that he was sad for professional reasons, which I thought was interesting/funny. But I thought that Mourinho did a great job of just getting that sorted out and moving on past that as quickly as possible. Because as you know, Sam, managing at that level is managing personalities. You're managing some of the wealthiest men in the world, some of the most popular men in the world when you're talking about Cristiano Ronaldo and some of these players. And certainly it's not easy to manage all of those personalities in a locker room. And he has done a good job. He's done a good job of that everywhere he's gone, and I think that's always been one of his strengths as a coach, is that his players play for him, they play hard for him, they play well for him, no matter what their status is, whether it be term of their contract financially or, you know, how popular a player they are.
Well, one of the things that has sort of struck me on this topic, Todd, is that I don't think I have ever heard a player come out and talk poorly about Jose Mourinho. And I'm even talking about people here that have been in his squads, you know, Lassana Diarra, for example. You know, he became a bit part player at Real Madrid. You know, he was a player that absolutely worked his socks off practicing in games, and he was always relied upon, but didn't get the minutes perhaps that his effort deserved, because he had better players in front of him. But you never hear these players, Todd, you know, talking poorly of him. And I think that says a lot about him as a human being and his ability to manage personality, to manage players. You know, he's the master of that. You know, there isn't anybody, you know, it's almost the same with, you know, with Alex Ferguson. You don't often hear players coming out criticizing the manager. And if they do, you know, they end up getting sacked. At a petrol station in the middle of Manchester, but
they certainly don't stay very long.
They bring out a book and then they get fired. Yeah,
right. Exactly. Yeah. If you want to stay in Manchester United, don't write a book. That's the book.
Yeah. Unless you're Ryan Giggs.
Yeah. Unless you're Ryan Giggs. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Well, if you're Ryan Giggs, clearly you can do anything and still stay there. So, as he proved to us this last summer. But you know, I think Real Madrid. I'm actually glad to see in Spain that Atletico Madrid is doing so well. Obviously they have Falcao, one of the best players in the world, that helps. But it's just good to see somebody else competing in Spain besides Barca and Real Madrid. And, you know, I mean, at this point, I do think that Real will, you know, regain form, or they're already regaining it. They will continue to regain form. And will find themselves up with Barcelona. But I think it's going to be tough for them to catch Barca at this point. And they're 11 points adrift of Barca. I can't see Barca dropping that many points over the course of the rest of this season. And I just don't see them catching them. But they are 5 points now off Atletico. I could see Real climbing back into second with Malaga behind them in fourth. Their Champions League spot is going to be secured, I believe, Sam. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, you look at, you know, they only have to win one more game against Atletico Madrid. They won, obviously, this weekend. You know, if they beat Atletico Madrid in the return leg this season, all of a sudden those points have changed. And you would fancy, you know, Atletico Madrid, you know, to probably drop a little bit, you know, more points than Real Madrid. Nobody's going to catch Barcelona. You know, everybody was wondering, you know, what would happen when Pep Guardiola left. And, you know, there's a little bit of a slump there at maybe the early start of the season. They weren't perhaps hitting the form. Obviously, they lost to Celtic. But, you know, they're in sensational form, Todd, in Spain. And, you know, 5-1 winners again today. You know, that's the best start in the Liga history for any team. And, you know, this is a team that was supposedly at peak, you know, 18 months ago. It's astonishing talk, you know. It's like a conveyor belt of talent, isn't it?
It's unbelievable. It really is unbelievable, you know, what they're doing. Messi with two more goals today. And, you know, what else can you say that hasn't been said about him? I mean, that's his 83rd and 84th goal of 2012. It's unreal. What else can you say about Lionel Messi, and really what can you say about Barca? They're just a fantastic team. I love the way they play. They've got style. They've got great players. But the way they play, the way they work defensively, when they lose that ball, it's full pressure for that first, you know, 6 seconds, 6 to 8 seconds. They get it back most of the time. But that work rate that they put in, and then they just relax and they just knock it and they wait and they bide their time. It's great watching them play. I really enjoy it. And, again, this is Todd Stauber, and I'm with Sam Rady on From the Touchline for 90 Minutes on Blog Talk Radio and Backsports Page. Call in at 760-283-0846. From the Touchline is brought to you by My Soccer Trainer, the top soccer training app available and a must for any player or coach. My Soccer Trainer is available on Android and iPhone. And for the listeners at home out there, we were doing a little work on the show this week and just kind of going through some technical stuff, trying to improve some things. And along the way, I learned something very interesting about my co-host, Sam Lady. He has an affinity for a song, a recent song that's come out, and I wanted to just play here for you just the first few seconds of that song. So without further ado, Sam Lady's favorite song at the moment.
Open Gangnam Style.
It's just awful, isn't it, Sam? It's just unbelievable. But I couldn't resist. I had to do it. I had to let our listeners know that this is what you're doing on your spare time. You've got the Gangnam style going. You got the dance. You should have seen. You had the dance, listeners. It was very impressive. So there you go. A little bit of inside info on Sam Lady there.
I'm going to be the next YouTube sensation talk if it ever ends up on YouTube.
Oh yeah. Well, if I could have filmed some of it when you were over here, maybe we could have done that. But unfortunately, didn't do that. But either way, we're going to move on here, Sam. Kind of an interesting situation popped up this week. Wesley Sneijder. Frozen out at Inter Milan, where he has been for quite some time, and on £200,000 per week, they've just basically decided that he's not worth it and have frozen him out and say that unless he takes a wage cut, they're not going to play him. And it is, you know, a little bit of a shocking revelation there from Inter Milan, but as that happened, talks of Wesley Sneijder ending up at Manchester United began to resurface. Wesley Sneijder is a player that Alex Ferguson has sought after for some time, a player that almost came to Man United in the summer of 2011, but ended up not coming. And with this latest move from Inter Milan, Sam, what do you think? Do you think that Wesley Sneijder is on his way to Manchester United?
Well, I think Man United fans, and probably yourself included, are excited about the fact that may happen because, Man United obviously top of the league right now, 3 points clear of Man City, gone behind in 11 of their games so far this season, which is ridiculous, but managed to come out on top, and or at least come back from losing positions anyway. It would be a great addition. United have changed the system a little bit. This season he's sort of been transitioning to a more of a front three, and you certainly see Wesley Sneijder fitting into that, and maybe Fergie thinks that he's the person that's the missing part of the puzzle. Defensively, he's certainly not going to add anything to you. He's not that dynamic without the ball defensively, but offensively, he certainly is something that is going to supply the assists. Sneijder's not the person that tends to score the goal, but he's the person that tends to set the player up that scores the goal. He makes the job of a forward relatively easy with his decision-making and his technique. And, as a United fan, I'd be excited about that. I wish he'd bloody come to Liverpool.
Because
that way we could poke Jordan Henderson for £600 million and make our money back.
I was looking at this, though, Sam, and I agree with you. To a certain extent, or as you know, I am a United fan, and I was excited when I heard this. As I told you when we were listening to Gangnam Style, when we were working on the show this week, I was at with Manchester United in New York City when they were here for the All Star game a couple of years ago. I was in the team hotel, and I was sitting at a table that was about 4 feet away from Alex Ferguson, David Gill, and Sir Bobby Charlton. And they were talking about Wesley Sneijder, and I believe that was the conversation David Gill was having with Alex Ferguson, saying that they weren't going to be able to buy him, they weren't going to be able to bring him. Alex Ferguson was not happy in that conversation, as I was eavesdropping as best as I could, but he was not happy at all. He was very adamant that he wanted this player, and now it looks like it could potentially help them, but as I was looking at it, I mean, with the recent return of Darren Fletcher, the improved form of Anderson, he scored Manchester United's first goal today, and he's been playing very well. Is there room for him? We're talking Darren Fletcher, Anderson, Cleverley, Carrick, Scholes, Kagawa when he returns, and Rooney when Ferguson decides to put him in the midfield. It's not a bad cast when you think about it, Sam. Where will Wesley Sneijder fit into this mix?
Well, if Ferguson feels, Todd, that he's a player that's going to make them better, he'll find a place for him. Similar to the situation with Eric Cantona when he first joined Man United. If a player is that good and that influential, you find a place for them. And, Wesley Sneijder, the Wesley Sneijder of a couple of seasons ago certainly would have been the case, but you wonder perhaps, whether the Wesley Sneijder of you know, 2012, 2013 is going to be something that's really going to have a big impact on it. You know, it's almost in a situation where, you know, Rafael van der Vaart, when he went to Spurs, you know, arguably, you know, Spurs have not replaced him. You know, they certainly have not replaced Luka Modric, and they've not replaced, you know, van der Vaart. And, you know, there are players of extreme quality, extreme technical quality, and players that make the right decisions in the right areas of the field. And, you know, I think Wesley Sneijder is a player that a lot of people would want to sign. He's obviously on a huge amount of wages, and that obviously has is an issue for a lot of clubs. But
don't you think, Sam, that he'll have to take a pay cut if he expects to play at Manchester United? They're not going to pay him £200,000 a week.
Oh, not a chance. No, because if you do that, he's got six or seven other players in the Man United squad that have to be on as much as he's on. All of a sudden, you know, the wage bill becomes, you know, astronomical. But yeah, I think, you know, the question is, you know, maybe it's a situation where Ferguson says to Sneijder, if you want to play for Man United, you have to take a wage cut. And, you know, let's be honest, Todd, does he really need that much more money? And it's not as if he's going to go to Man United and be on £15 a week, right?
Right.
He's going to be going there and going to be on good money. But, you know, I think the challenge for him and for Ferguson is going to be, you know, if you want to play for a club like Man United and potentially be a part of history, then you have to take a wage cut. And, you know, how do you feel about that? You know, there aren't that many teams and clubs these days. You know, you probably look at PSG, maybe Man City, you know, and a couple of perhaps the Russian clubs that are in a position to pay that amount of money. But I think hopefully they'll throw Nani into the deal, and you know, that'll make things a little bit easier. You know, Nani maybe is a player that Inter Milan have got their eyes on, and it's a perfect opportunity, you know, for Man United to get rid of Nani.
Right, which is something they've been looking to do, and I don't think that's a secret. And, you know, Italy might be a good place for Nani. I know that United isn't, so anywhere else would be good. But maybe that would be a good spot. My other question on Sneijder, though, is that, I mean, Inter Milan is one of the biggest clubs in the world, one of the best clubs in the world. They want to win competitions. If they felt he was going to help them do that, I can't believe that they would freeze him out if they thought that he could help them. And, you know, so I'm wondering, what is his form? What kind of form is he going to be in? I mean, you know, they're not playing him for a reason. He's obviously not doing a job there, or he'd be playing. So my question is, you know, what kind of form is he in, and do we need to worry about that, Sam? Does Manchester United need to worry about that?
Well, I think you have to worry about, you know, picking up a player that's, you know, in the late 20s, early 30s. You know, certainly if there's a big transfer fee involved. Certainly if they're demanding, you know, a huge wage. I think Wesley Sneijder is a player that can make Man United better. And if you look at Inter Milan, Todd, you know, Sneijder is the Frank Lampard of Inter Milan. And, you know, Inter Milan now have got a young coach, similar to DVD and Jose Mourinho. He's a young guy, 36, 37 years old. And by all accounts, he's doing a fantastic job there. And, you know, you never know really what goes on behind the scenes. And, you know, my belief is, you know, having read different stories, and this is that, you know, he's been under sort of strict instructions from the ownership that, you know, he needs to reduce the wage bill and he needs to drop the average age of the team. And, you know, you've got a player like Sneijder who's on £200,000 a week, you know, 29, 30 years old, you know, it's going to be a big strain. And, there's an evolution going on at Inter Milan, similar to that we see at Chelsea. And, you know, he's basically, you know, Sneijder's basically been phased out because he doesn't fit the profile, you know, of where they're going as a business organization and also as a team, and, you know, similar to the Lampard and similar to the situation that we see, I think, you know, at Chelsea. There's not a lot different there.
Yeah, well, it'll certainly be interesting to see who else comes into the race to sign him. I'm guessing Man City will, since they try to sign every player that Manchester United goes after. But I think that there's going to be some other suitors. And, you know, while we're talking about the MLS today, Sam, Is the MLS a potential landing spot for Wesley Snyder?
I think Wesley Snyder has still got 2 or 3 years at the highest level in Europe before he thinks about the MLS. You know, if you're asking the same question about Frank Lampard, you know, I think Frank Lampard's time now makes a lot of sense for him, you know, to come to MLS, whether it's the LA Galaxy or Cosmos or, you know, New York Red Bulls, but it looks like it's going to be a Galaxy. Makes a lot of sense, you know, 33, 34 years old, just recently won the Champions League. You know, his bonus has kicked in. I've been at Chelsea for 10, 11 years now, so, you know, it's a perfect opportunity for him to move in. But you think with Wesley Snyder, you know, you think Snyder's got a few more years left in him at this level, and perhaps then a little bit of a honeymoon period with him and Esther stuff like that.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see. That's for certain. We're gonna move on here. This is Todd Stauber and Sam Lady from the Touchline for 90 Minutes on Blog Talk Radio and backsportspage.com. You've got about 18 minutes here that you can still call in to talk to us, 760-283-0846. From the Touchline is brought to you by My Soccer Trainer, the top soccer training app available and a must for any player or coach. My Soccer Trainer is available on Android and iPhone. We're just going to jump around Europe here real quick, Sam, if you don't mind. Just look at some scores from around the world. In Germany today, a 1-1 draw between Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund. Not a bad result there for Dortmund. Bayer Leverkusen was 1-0 over Nuremberg. Mainz was 2-1 over Hannover 96. And Schalke came away with a 1-1 draw against Borussia Mönchengladbach. Moving on over, we'll go ahead back to Spain for a few other results there. As we already mentioned, the Madrid Derby went to Real 2-0. We mentioned Barcelona with a 5-1 victory over Athletic Bilbao. Real Sociedad, San Sebastian Club, with a 5-2 win over Valencia. It's a big win for them. And Getafe with a 1-0 win over Malaga. We're going to head to the Serie A, over to Italy, where we were just talking here about Inter Milan. And on Saturday, just one game in Italy, a 3-0 win for Juventus over Torino. And we're going to finish up here in France, where we were talking about PSG earlier in the show. They, however, did drop a match 2-1 to Nice today. We had Lyon with a 1-0 win over Montpellier. Bordeaux, a 2-2 draw with Sochaux. And Lille with a 0-0 draw to Bastia. We're gonna go right in here to the game predictor, where currently I've got a 7-4 record and am sitting ahead of Sam Leite, who's currently sitting with a 6-7 record. And we're going to start with Newcastle, Wigan, Sam. You did mention a score earlier in the show on this, but as always, I've given you the opportunity and the chance to go and rethink that and change that if you want. So, Sam, Newcastle, Wigan, where are you at with that game?
Well, I've had a moment to reflect now, and I've sort of reviewed my thoughts on that. And based on an indifferent weekend in the Premier League, I'm going to go with 3-2 to Newcastle.
3-2 Newcastle, which is, I love it, because I went 3-2 Wigan. I agree with you that there's going to be a lot of goals in this game. The game will be played at St. James Park, giving Newcastle a little bit of an edge there, but I just feel I feel Wigan will win this game 3-2. So we've got Sam on 3-2 to Newcastle. Todd is on 3-2 to Wigan. Moving on, we're going to go to the other game that is still left to be played this week in the Premier League, Norwich-Sunderland at Norwich, Sam.
Norwich-Sunderland, I'm going to go with a 2-1 to Sunderland. I think their performances recently have not reflected the outcome of the game. And I think they're due one. And I also think Norwich are due a loss. 2-1 Sunderland.
2-1 Sunderland. And staying in form, I've gone 2-1 to Norwich. Just so our listeners know, and so you know, Sam, I've already put mine, I've already made my predictions before I have asked Sam. So I already had 3-2 Wigan before he came 3-2 Newcastle. I did already have Norwich 2-1 over Sunderland before Sam came in with that score. So just to clear that up. So that's great. I'm looking forward to going against you in those games. We're going to move over to Portugal for the third game that we're going to predict here on the Lisbon Derby. Sporting Lisbon, Benfica, Sam.
Oh, Sporting Lisbon, Benfica. Having spent a little bit of time in Lisbon myself, a wonderful city, a soccer city, two stadiums and not too far from each other, I'm going to go with a 2-1 to Sporting.
Excellent. I haven't been to Lisbon, but I would someday like to go, and hopefully I will see a game when I'm there, but I'm going to go 3-1 to Sporting Lisbon over Benfica. I bet that'd be a great derby to be at, don't you think, Sam?
Sorry, say again.
Don't you think that'd be a great derby to be at? It'd be a great place to watch.
Yeah, you know, stadiums there are about a mile apart on different sides of the road. It's quite incredible, yeah.
Oh really? Yeah, yeah. That would be a fantastic spot to end up. One of the best games that I've attended in Europe was at the Bernabeu. It was Real Madrid, and it was a Wednesday night, and they played Sporting Gijon, and they've since been relegated, I believe. But Sporting Gijon is known in Spain to have some of the best traveling supporters. In Spain, and we were sat right below their section, and it was something to behold. I took a video of it, which is up on my Facebook page, and they were literally hanging in the rafters of the Bernabeu, no kidding. And in the game, Gijon went up 1-0 before Real came back. Cristiano Ronaldo hit a free kick, but it was quite a spectacle. And I think going to games in that area of the world. It's just something that everybody should experience, because it's going to a game in England, as you well know, Sam, is fantastic, but in its own way. And the games in Spain, Portugal, that area of the world are just a different level as far as the passion and the commitment of the supporters.
It's culturally, it's a very sort of romantic country, isn't it, Portugal? And I actually arrived in Lisbon the day that Sporting Lisbon were playing Everton in a European game, and the taxi driver had the game on the radio, told me it was so loud, right, and my ears were ringing for about 3 days after. And in fact, it was so funny because as soon as the taxi driver was so engrossed in the game that when he stopped to let me out to get out of the train station, he actually forgot to charge me for the cab. So it was a bit of a win-win.
And I'm sure you were chasing him down, trying to pay him that fare.
Of course, yeah. I was more satisfied with the fact that I managed to survive the cab ride. I thought there was a potential that it might have been the last ever cab ride I've ever had in my life.
Yeah, I experienced a cab ride. I was coming back from one of my trips to Spain, and I went through Milan. And there's two airports in Milan. We landed at one. Maybe it was Rome. I'm not sure. It was either Milan or Rome. But we landed at one airport and had to get a cab to the other one. Just getting the cab itself, I mean, there was guys, you know, a bunch of cab drivers standing outside just trying to entice you to get in. We got in this cab, and this guy, I didn't think I was going to make it. I thought it was over. I thought I was going to die right there in Italy. So the cab rides are probably just as exciting and just as much of a spectacle as the games are there. We're going to move on to our last prediction here, and it's going to be maybe a little bit of time before we find out the answer to this prediction. But where will David Beckham end up? This is when we've speculated, we've talked about it. This is actually, you've got it, you Sam, I'm making you tell me where you think he's going to end up.
It's a tough one. He's talked about Champions League, right? He's talked about, you know, going back to England. He's talked about, you know, obviously France. It's a really tough one. You know, a lot of the signs point towards, you know, PSG. It's a club that has got a huge financial backer. It's a club that is obviously looking to position itself as one of the top clubs in Europe. And to do that, Todd, you know, they need big profile players. They've got, you know, obviously Ibrahimovic, who is a fantastic talent, and they've made some other significant signings over the course of the summer. You know, David Beckham, you know, one thing that any team can guarantee, Todd, is when they sign David Beckham is they're going to sell jerseys, right, all around the world, whether it's somebody in Thailand buying a PSG jersey, whether it's somebody in England, whether it's somebody in the United States, whether it's somebody on the moon, you know, all of a sudden we're going to see, you know, David Beckham PSG, you know, jerseys floating around. That's exactly, you know,
well,
these.
I think you make a great point there, because I will admit here on the air that I purchased, paid full price, and have sitting in my closet a David Beckham LA Galaxy jersey. And as a Seattle Sounders fan, I it was a difficult purchase to make, but I just always felt that it would be something that I would want to have for the rest of my life, something I could pass on to my kids, you know, for as a memento of, you know, one of the most popular players ever to play being here. So are you going PSG then, Sam? Is that your answer?
That was your answer that you've fed to me and encouraged me to believe. So I'm going to go with it, yeah.
I fed it to you, and now I take it away. I'm going to shock you and everyone else. But I'm going to say that David Beckham is heading back to England. But he's not heading to one of the big clubs. I think he's heading to QPR. And I'm going to give you my reasoning for this. Okay? The first is that it's well documented that he and Victoria Beckham would like to be in London, spend time in London. They already do, but, you know, obviously they've got Buckingham Palace there and in England, and, you know, I think that London is a place where he wants to be. He's gone there to train in the off season of the MLS season last year when he went to Tottenham. He's done some training at Arsenal as well in the past, and the Tottenham journey brings up my next point, is that when he was at Tottenham training, Harry Redknapp was not too shy in just letting everyone know how much he admired David Beckham, how much he thought he was just a great professional, how much, you know, he just thought he was good for the club. He was only there training, and Redknapp said that he had a huge influence there on the, you know, the training, the quality of the training that was going on. And, you know, I think that I think that Harry Redknapp is a coach, is a man that would like to go after David Beckham, not just because of what David Beckham can bring to QPR, but because I think he's a guy that would want to make a big splash at something of that nature. I think what more of a perfect person to bring in to dig a club out of the relegation zone, and bring him in January. And you know, if you're talking about the locker room and any issues that might be there at QPR, I think between Harry Redknapp and David Beckham, that could be sorted out. So I'm gonna go on, and I'm gonna say that he's going to QPR. We'll wait to see. I think the chances of that actually happening are low, but I'm gonna take a chance on that. Any thoughts on my prediction there, Sam?
Well, you know, it does appeal in the sense that, you know, if David Beckham walks in the change room at QPR, you know, I think the bickering stops. Right? You know, you've got, you know, David Beckham's got money, he's got fame, he's got prestige, he's got experience, he's got everything. And, you know, it seems by all accounts that that is one of the challenges that QPR right now in the dressing room, you know, the haves and the have-nots. And, you know, the haves in terms of financially are not necessarily pulling the weight. And, you know, the have-nots are the players, perhaps, that are, you know, making the team tick right now. So, you know, for a personality like Beckham to walk into the change room, one, he's respected, right? Because of what he's done, not only because of what he's done in the past, Todd, but because what he brings to the training environment, what he brings to the changing room. And you know, there was a stage today in the game where, you know, you know Becker is, you know, 36, 37 years old. He made a recovery run, and you know, inside the box in about 68, 70th minute, and you know, it just showed the level of desire that he has to be a winner. And you know, he is the type of professional, Todd, you know, regardless of his status, you know, he's a winner, right? He leads by example.
Yeah, he definitely is. And I think that's something that has gone maybe a little bit unnoticed in Beckham's career, is that he is a winner. And because he's such a famous guy, and he's got, you know, Posh Spice, his wife, and, you know, he is, you know, wildly popular in all areas of the entire world. But what people lose sight of is that he's a blue-collar football player. He's a blue-collar, hard-working guy. If you listen to any interview with any player that's ever played with him, any coach that's ever worked with him, he's the first guy to training. He's the last guy to leave. He puts in an honest day of work every time he steps on the field. It never wavers. And he also, you know, we talked about this earlier in the show, that he's been a guy that has taken adversity and made the most of it in every situation, in multiple situations. You know, he did it when he was blamed by English fans for England being knocked out of the World Cup by Argentina. He came back and had probably one of his best years ever in the English Premier League the next year when he was getting abused in stadiums. You know, it was quite bad for him, but he made the best of that. He was at Real Madrid. This was a little over 6 years ago, and announced he was coming to the LA Galaxy. And as he had to announce that before Real Madrid's season was done, Fabio Capello dropped him from the team. He was training with the U team and with the reserves. And Beckham, you know, we've talked about this before, instead of pouting, instead of, you know, calling it a day, he showed Fabio Capello what character was all about in the next month. And he showed him to a point where Capello had to eat his words and put him back in the lineup because they needed him. And he went on to help them achieve things there in that season, in his last season at Real Madrid. So, you know, I think that you're right. The kind of character that he brings into a locker room, whoever gets him is going to get more than just David Beckham, the player, what he can give to them on the pitch, more than just selling the jerseys and everything else. He's going to get somebody that is relevant still as a player and just comes in with just credibility with everything that he does, and it's going to hold all those other players to a standard. And we seem to have lost Sam Lady here. Sam is no longer with us.
No, I'm still here, Tom.
Oh, he is still here.
Slight technical issue, Carol.
He's back. So, you know, Sam, you know, as far as David Beckham goes, I like I said, QPR, I think is would be a great spot. I'd love to see him end up there, because that would, when he talks about, you know, where he's going to spend his final challenge as a player, I think that would be quite the challenge for him if he was at QPR. But I do think I agree with your decision. Obviously, I spoon-fed the idea to you, so of course I'm going to agree with it. But I do think that there's a very good chance that PSG is his next stop.
Well, I mean, one of the things we haven't talked about, Todd, is the chance that he will return to AC Milan, of course, because, you know, he had a very, very, very well documented, you know, the stay with AC Milan and actually performed very, very well for them. And he'd always said that if he had the opportunity, he would go back. So, you know, we should not, that is not something that we've talked about. It's not something that I've read about in the press, but, you know, we should not rule that out because, you know, as an ownership group, you're looking at it and thinking, well, if we can bring David Beckham in now, you know, for the last 6, 7, 8 months of the season, and not only does it help our on-field performance, but certainly off-field performance, and certainly, you know, the Italian league probably needs a little bit of that in the moment with all the, you know, the match-fixing
Certainly. Well, and the other thing about Italy is the game in Italy in the Serie A is played at a bit of a slower pace, not as much pressure. It might suit him as a player. I mean, he did very well when he went there. you know, to AC Milan. He was a very good player for them. And you know, I think that that league, that style of play might suit where he's at as a player right now also a little better. But it will be
interesting. Well, one thing I've just thought about, Todd, is that there's no way David Beckham is going to go to a club that's not wearing anything but Adidas.
Yeah.
So, or Adidas. So we should think about that. I'm not quite sure what PSG are wearing, but if they're an Adidas club, then that looks like a likely target for him.
Very true. Well, that's it for us here at From the Touchline for 90 Minutes. We thank you for listening in, and we'll see you next week.